Please proceed. Now, the panel has other commitments, so we have to keep all cases on their schedule today. If you want rebuttal time, please stop short of using up the 10 minutes.
Okay, I will watch the clock. I would like about 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
Just stop yourself, because the clock shows everything.
Okay.
I'll try to remind you if I can remember.
Thank you. There are two arguments that we would like to focus on this morning on behalf of Mr. Lopez-Lizante. First, the res judicata argument, the issue about the prior proceedings, whether or not there should be second proceedings after the issue was addressed to first proceedings. We think that it's evident in light of the recent Bravo-Pedroza case. And second, in any event, that with respect to the decision made by the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals, there are legal errors in the decision, in particular with respect to the legal concept of rehabilitation. And this court has jurisdiction, should review the decision with respect to the application of that term rehabilitation. First of all, with respect to res judicata, which, of course, generally stands for the principle that a person will not be prosecuted again a second time on the basis of conduct that was addressed in the first round of the first prosecution. The Bravo-Pedroza case indicates that courts assume that Congress will legislate with the understanding that this principle, res judicata, applies. In other words, the government will not bring a second case on the basis of the same evidence that was available the first time around.
What about when there's been a change in the law in the intervening period?
Well, I think the question then is, what did Congress intend when it enacted that law? Did Congress intend to override the normal principles of res judicata? I think the analysis in St. Cyr is relevant here also. In St. Cyr, of course, the Supreme Court held that when Congress overturns a principle like res judicata, retroactivity principle, there should be a clear statement in the legislation that Congress intends to overturn that principle. If we look at what Congress enacted in 1996, the relevant provision here, the aggravated felony provision, which was enacted in Section 321 of the IRA, the Illegal Immigration Reform Law, Section 321. There are provisions there that talk about the scope of or the retroactivity of that term.
I thought Congress said they wanted the new definition to apply retroactively to any case brought after that.
That's correct. The term aggravated, the new definition of, quote, aggravated felony, does apply retroactively to convictions before, on, or after that date. But that, as in St. Cyr, that definition doesn't tell us anything about whether Congress intended to override the retroactivity principles, res judicata, for example. The fact that definition applies retroactively doesn't necessarily mean that Congress intended for the Immigration Service to go back and reopen old cases and apply that new definition to those actions that were already taken. In fact, if you look at Section 321C, where Congress there does address this question, well, how should this definition be applied? Should it be applied retroactively in all cases? There, Congress says that this new definition should be applied to actions taken on or after the enactment date, and so clearly leaving off the before part. In other words, Congress indicates there that with respect to actions that have already been taken, and of course there was with respect to Mr. Lopez, there was an action that had been taken against him beforehand. Congress says, well, we don't go back and reopen that case. We'll apply this new definition of aggravated felony with respect to disqualifying provisions, or with respect to actions that we're going to take against an individual. We apply that to actions taken on or after, but not necessarily actions that have already been taken before. I think that the statute at least indicates that res judicata should be accepted and applied. At least there's no clear statement that Congress intends to override the ordinary presumption that res judicata applies. I would also point to a related provision, Section 309. Section 321 addresses, you know, this new substantively, this new definition of aggravated felony and how far does it apply. There are also procedural provisions, new rules for how deportation proceedings should be handled. You issue a notice to appear, new rules about detention while a person is going through deportation proceedings. These procedural rules in Section 309, Congress says that these new procedural rules in IIRA do not apply if a person is already in deportation or exclusion proceedings. It says if a person is in deportation or exclusion proceedings as of the effective date, then these new amendments shall not apply. Again, it indicates a presupposition, I guess, that Congress is does not intend these new rules to be applied retroactively to cases already handled or even cases pending. These new rules don't apply except with respect to future cases.
Your time is running out. Why don't you address for a minute the rehabilitation issue?
With respect to the rehabilitation issue, I think the immigration judge and the board affirmed this, affirmed the immigration judge's decision. The immigration judge basically made a decision inconsistent with governing precedent decisions. The immigration judge said, okay, look, we've got to deal with this question of rehabilitation. How do we know whether this person is rehabilitated? Well, he adopted a standard that has never been used before. In order to prove rehabilitation, you've got to prove that there's almost no probability that you'll commit this offense in the future. But then he goes on to say, and this is the language the court uses, it says, the way that the court is going to determine that is by looking at whether the testimony is consistent with the police reports. And that's just completely so in other words, what the judge is saying, the only way that this person can show rehabilitation is by testifying consistently with the police reports. If you don't testify consistently with police reports, then you can't show rehabilitation. No, not really. It's the argument. It's an argument. I think it's an argument that the immigration judge has misapplied the legal concept, the term rehabilitation.
I'm sorry.
Well, there's several cases that have indicated, most recently, the Ramadan case and the Afridi cases hold that this court has jurisdiction to review the application of legal concepts to facts. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's quite clear. Where the Laura Luis Hernandez case as well holds
well,
the same.
Do you think it's possible that the board simply looked at the seriousness of this offense and just said this is such a serious offense here that what you've shown with respect to rehabilitation just doesn't overcome the seriousness?
Well, it's not clear. I mean,
it's kind of a muddled decision.
It might have done that, but if that's what it did,
if that's what it did, then the case is over.
That would be wrong. That is legally incorrect because the board has standards as to how
they make it clear in their prior precedent that you can look at the seriousness of the offense and weigh that against rehabilitation. I mean, rehabilitation is just one of the factors that the board tells the IJs to take a look at.
Right, but
it's not dispositive.
It's not dispositive, but the immigration judge here treated it as dispositive. It said the way to determine whether or not rehabilitation has been met is whether you testify consistently.
Why isn't that a discretionary issue that on which we don't have jurisdiction?
Well, none of the other the precedent decisions say that a person can establish rehabilitation even if he claims innocence. What you have to look at are his expressions of remorse. You have to look at his good conduct, whether there's a period of good conduct, how long that period is. All of those factors have to go into that. In this case, the immigration judge didn't do that. He didn't follow those governing rules.
If you want to do some rebuttal, you better stop.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Okay.
We'll add a few seconds. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Leslie McKay for the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. I'll go in basically the same order On the res judicata issue, the main question for this court is jurisdiction, is the aggravated felony, and we would argue, number one, that the court lacks jurisdiction. This is an aggravated felony under the amended definition. He doesn't dispute that. He disputes that the amended definition applies to him. It does.
Well, under Arriver, we have, you know, we have jurisdiction to look at legal issues.
Of course, Your Honor.
What he's saying, as I understand the res judicata mm-hmm. issue, is that there is a rule of administrative res judicata which was misapplied here.
And I don't think that there was.
And that's a legal argument.
Correct. It would be. However, the argument that he's raising simply isn't really a colorable question for this court because, number one, the exact same issue has already been rejected in Cortes and Aragon-Ayon by this court. And number two,
well, that's a retroactivity issue.
Correct. But and then on the res judicata, Bravo-Pedroza doesn't change the result. In Bravo, what the court was interested in was whether DHS could bring new proceedings on the basis of evidence it could have brought in the first proceedings. And what's critical about Bravo that distinguishes it from this case, in Bravo there were three charging documents. There was an order to show cause, there was a later notice to appear, and there was a third notice to appear. So the issue in Bravo was that the DHS lost on that second notice to appear and turns around a couple of days later and lodges the third notice to appear based on evidence it could have brought during those second proceedings. Here we have one order to show cause prior to ERIRA and a notice to appear after ERIRA. The aggravated felony ground, sexual abuse of a minor, did not exist prior to ERIRA. There's no way that DHS could have brought this aggravated felony ground prior in those prior deportation proceedings. He was originally charged with a crime involving moral turpitude, but at the time, that ground required that the commission of the offense be within 5 years of entry and result in a prison sentence of a year or longer, neither of which applied. So that's why those proceedings were terminated. Years down the road, ERIRA is passed, a fundamental change in the law has occurred, and now he's removable as an aggravated felon. That's how we get into these proceedings, and that's why the res judicata argument fails, and Bravo-Pedroza doesn't change that result.
It's not necessarily, it has some plausible basis to it. It's not a completely frivolous argument.
I don't think that it's frivolous. I think that it fails. I think that what the court was most concerned with in Bravo and in Ramon Sepulveda, which is cited in Bravo, doesn't exist here. We don't have a situation where DHS is.
There's a significant change in the law.
There is a significant change in the law, and DHS could not have, at the time he was in deportation proceedings, brought this ground of removability against him.
So let me ask you, what does one have to do in a situation like this, with this kind of conviction, to show that they're rehabilitated?
Well,
what do you understand the law to be before the board?
I understand the law to be that rehabilitation, as you mentioned, I believe, is one factor in the discretionary calculus. Of course, the 212C decision is a discretionary decision for the immigration judge and as well as the board. So my understanding is that rehabilitation is a factor to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, depending on the facts and circumstances of each case as they're presented to the immigration judge. And in that sense, Petitioner's Counsel mentioned Ramadan. Ramadan is also distinguishable because Ramadan specifically excludes from its holding discretionary decisions, specifically cites 212C, and discusses.
As I understand the argument here, and I may be wrong about this, but that the board has to consider everything that the petitioner presents, and a failure to do so would deprive him of a fair hearing.
In this case, Your Honor.
So what I understand they're saying is that the IJ came up with his own definition or his own standard for what the petitioner must show for rehabilitation, which counsel said is he must admit, cannot testify differently to anything in the police reports. And if he does, he's not shown rehabilitation.
I think that it's important to view the immigration judge's comments in this case in the context of the larger decision. The decision on 212C is 12 pages long. He goes through all of the factors. He, at the outset, at 169 to 171 of the record, he identifies the appropriate legal standards. He talks about balancing the equities. He says at at page 171 that rehabilitation is not a prerequisite. He acknowledges all of that precedent. And what I think what the immigration judge was doing in this case wasn't announcing a new standard. By the time he then moves through all that testimony to the end, what he was doing was saying, your crime was so serious, what you did was so serious, I consider rehabilitation to be a major factor in the balancing of the equities. Your Honor, it's the government's position that the court lacks jurisdiction, that the aggravated felony ground precludes jurisdiction under Section 242 of the Act, and that the remainder of the arguments presented by petitioner in this case don't raise a colorable legal or constitutional question.
Let's assume that the aggravated felony characterization doesn't totally preclude the whole case from being considered. But even if we have jurisdiction to consider the res judicata argument on this issue about rehabilitation, isn't that clearly part of a discretionary decision about waiver on which we don't have jurisdiction?
Exactly, Your Honor. I think this case presents different layers of jurisdictional issues. We kind of start at the top and move
down.
I'd like
to get you past your first one.
On the 212C issue, on the rehabilitation issue, we absolutely argue that that was part of the immigration judge's discretionary weighing of the positive and negative equities, and that the court would therefore lack jurisdiction to consider.
But in arriving at that ultimate discretionary decision, if the IJ were, you know, refused to follow, let's say, established board precedent, or refused to consider certain evidence that was presented, or would not allow the immigrant to bring in witnesses or something like that, you would agree that, you know, to the extent he asserts a constitutional claim with respect to depriving him of a fair hearing, as you work your way through to a ultimate decision, that we would have jurisdiction to review those constitutional issues.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, and I would simply assert that I don't think that that's the case here, given, and again, I think what's the most important is, you know, the comments that petitioner focuses on that were made by the immigration judge were made on page 181 of the record, and that's 12 pages after he started his analysis. This is not an immigration judge who started at the top and said, rehabilitation is it. This is how I determine if you're rehabilitated. I'm not paying any attention to matter of Edwards, matter of Moran, Yepes Prado. This is how I do it in my court, and that's all I'm looking at. That's not what happened here. The immigration judge clearly considered all of the positive equities, acknowledged that this was a very close case, a very difficult case, and I think ultimately simply determined that rehabilitation for him in light of this case was the factor that tipped the scales and caused him to, I guess, decline to favorably exercise his discretion. But it is ultimately a discretionary decision, and there
sure, at the bottom end, it's a discretionary decision. I don't, you know, everybody recognizes that.
Correct. And then, I guess on the last little bit, in terms of ticking down through the jurisdictional questions on the motion to reopen, again, I think that's where he starts to really raise the due process issue with respect to the motion, which he hasn't argued here, so I'm not going to get too far into it. But we would simply argue that it's really not a due process claim; it's an abuse of discretion claim, and that in any event, he didn't exhaust that particular issue before the board. So the jurisdictional issues kind of winnowed down. I think that's all I have. Unless the court has further questions on any particular issue, I'm happy to submit on the briefs. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, I did not mean to withdraw the due process arguments that were made in the briefs. I think my point was that the argument with respect to rehabilitation is that the immigration judge did not follow the governing precedent. The court has jurisdiction to review that, to make sure that the immigration judge follows the rules of the game. In preparing for this deportation hearing, you know, counsel prepares with the understanding that the governing precedent decisions, Mendez Morales and Aragon and Yepes Prado, those are going to be followed. And so that colorable constitutional issues are covered. But in addition, under the Real ID Act, this court can review questions of law. And in Ramadan and other decisions. Sorry?
Those
In Hernandez, Laura Louise Hernandez case, that was specifically a discretionary decision, a discretionary adjustment of status, an allegedly discretionary decision that was made, and this court held that the court has jurisdiction to ensure that the governing precedents are followed as a legal matter. I think that's quite clear under the Real Life ID Act that even in the context of a discretionary decision, the judge can't throw the governing precedents out the window. Those precedents have to be followed, and they were not followed. They were not followed here. The immigration judge, in his decision, said that the way, the only way that he's going to determine whether or not rehabilitation has been met, is whether you testify consistently. His decision shows that the only thing that he considered, and that's not correct.
We have to bring the argument to a close because you're a minute over the extra time we gave you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
So it is proper to respond to Judge Rawlinson's question, so I appreciate you doing it. Unless Judge Pais or Judge Rawlinson have further questions, we will conclude the argument. We thank Mr. Pau and Ms. McKay for their arguments. Very helpful. Lopez-Bizanti shall be submitted.